When Arthur Manchek stepped into the small soundproofed booth and sat down before the telephone, he knew exactly what he was going to do, but he was not very sure why he was doing it. Manchek picked up the telephone and dialed. The time was exactly 12 midnight. The machinery was there. The cables, the codes, the teleprinters had all been waiting dormant for 2 years. It only required Manchek's call to set the machinery in motion. When he finished dialing, he heard a series of clicks, and then a low hum, which meant he knew that the call was being fed into one of the scrambled trunk lines. After a moment, the humming stopped, and a voice said, "This is a recording. State your name and your message, and hang up."
"Major Arthur Manchek, Vandenberg Air Force Base, Scoop Mission Control. I believe it is necessary to call up a wildfire alert. I have confirmatory visual data at this post, which has just been closed for security reasons."
There was no answer, only a click, as the connection was automatically broken. The line was dead. He hung up and sighed. It was all very unsatisfying. Allison Stone was tired. At her home in the hills overlooking the Stanford campus, she and her husband, the chairman of the Stanford Bacteriology Department, had held a party for 15 couples, and everyone had stayed late. Mrs. Stone was annoyed. She had been raised in official Washington, where one second cup of coffee, offered pointedly without cognac, was accepted as a signal to go home. Unfortunately, she thought, academics did not follow the rules. She had served the second cup of coffee hours ago, and everybody was still there. Shortly before 1 a.m., the doorbell rang. Answering it, she was surprised to see two military men standing side by side in the night.
"I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am," one said politely, "but is this the residence of Dr. Jeremy Stone?"
"Yes," she said, frowning slightly, "it is."
"Ma'am, we must see Dr. Stone at once, please."
It all seemed strange to her, and she found herself frightened. Everyone was still talking and laughing. The room was noisy and dense with smoke. She found Jeremy in a corner, in the midst of some argument about riots. She touched his shoulder, and he disengaged himself from the group.
"I know this sounds funny," she said, "but there are some kind of army men here. They say they want to see you."
For a moment, Stone looked surprised, and then he nodded. "I'll take care of it." His attitude annoyed her. He seemed almost to be expecting it.
"Captain Morton," the man said to Stone.
He did not offer to shake hands.
"There's a fire, sir."
"All right," Stone said. He looked down at his dinner jacket. "Do I have time to change?"
"I'm afraid not, sir."
To her astonishment, Allison saw her husband nod quietly.
"All right."
He turned to her and said, "I've got to leave." His face was blank and expressionless, and it seemed to her like a nightmare. His face was like that while he spoke.
"What is it?" she said. "Are you under arrest?"
"No," he said with a slight smile. "It's nothing like that.
Make my apologies to everyone, will you?"